Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the People Stack. My guest for this episode is Jill Wetzler. She is the head of infrastructure engineering at Lyft, and she was named one of the most powerful female engineers of 2017 by Business Insider. Welcome, Jill.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I am so excited to talk with you, Jill. So let's dive in with the very first question. I am curious about your role at Lyft and also more specifically what it represents in your career journey. So how about you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm currently director of engineering at Lyft. And what that means is that I generally have a pretty wide scope across engineering. So I lead about 9 different teams in infrastructure right now. We're growing really rapidly. We're probably going to have another like 4 teams if you talk to me in 3 months. So typically we've been kind of staffing up teams, and then as they reach some sort of critical mass, we'll tease them apart and create new teams. So generally what my teams are doing are building the infrastructure that Lyft engineers use to develop code, to remain productive, to develop features really quickly. And there are kind of 3 parts of infrastructure right now. There's developer infrastructure that these teams represent what Lyft engineers use to actually develop their code locally, test their code, move them through our various environments out to production. There's core runtime infrastructure, so that would be things like our data storage layer, our networking infrastructure, our logging and monitoring. And then we're currently building out a reliability software engineering org as well, so that would be something kind of akin to an SRE org. So lots of scope and impact. And what this really represents for me, I think, is kind of a little bit of an inflection point in my career. The interesting thing about my title as director of engineering is that I have this very like vivid memory. A few years ago, I was like watching some sort of, I don't even remember what I was watching, but it was some sort of like interview with influential women in technology. And I remember Jocelyn Goldfein, who's now at Zeta Ventures, but at the time, she was director of engineering at Facebook. And they were talking to her, and she was saying something really smart, like she usually does. And I think this was right around the time that I was thinking about switching into a management role. And I remember seeing a woman with the title director of engineering and thinking, like, that's a title I want. That's something that I could do. And so while I usually tell people not to, you know, chase titles, I think they can be contentious things. They mean different things to different people, and they mean different things at different companies. That was a really, like, pivotal moment for me. And it was kind of one of those, like, if you can see it, you can be it moments. There just aren't that many women that we see with director of engineering titles. And so, you know, I didn't come into Lyft with a director title. That's something that, I earned about a year in. And that was kind of a big moment for me. And the other thing is that this has really been my opportunity to grow an org very quickly. I started out with about 7 engineers when I joined, and now my org is around 70, and I think we're set to double in the next year. So this is the first time that I've really been able to build up managers under me. I've been able to hire in some experienced managers who I think are, you know, far more talented at some things that I'm a little bit weaker in. I've been able to transition some people internally to management roles. And that's been super rewarding for me to just have that experience. And I feel like this sets me up for, you know, whatever my next role is. I feel like I have a few different directions that I can go in.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. Such a great story, and it's inspiring. And the thing that resonated with me the most was when you said, if you could see it, you can be it. And I absolutely relate to, you know, you may not necessarily want to chase titles because director of engineering at one company means something completely different than in another company. But by the same token, like, I've heard that story in lots of other different forms where it's basically, I have this vision, I've seen somebody inspired me, or I saw someone's LinkedIn profile, or I saw a job ad, I was like, I want that in 10 years. And it actually reminds me of a quote. I think it goes something like, only those who can see the invisible can achieve the impossible. And love sort that. Of like that opposite of, oh, I'll believe it when I say it. Well, see it. Well, actually, you need to see it first, and then you make it happen. So I love that you're able to do that, and really move up and from like a manager to essentially a manager of managers, right? That's kind of what you're doing at the director level.
Yeah.
Got it. Cool. So, do you care to share what your future might hold, or at least what your plans are, as far as, you know, going along the lines of the see it, be it kind of theme? What do you see for your future now? What are the different paths you might choose?
Yeah. So, I mean, near term is definitely thinking about how to continue scaling my org. Right now, you know, one of the things that's really exciting is this ability to build out a reliability engineering org and to sort of see this, it's our answer to an SRE role, and sort of to see that from its inception and to work with someone who I think is very experienced in that area to build that out. So that's currently what I'm hiring for. And I think that's going to have like a huge impact across Lyft. So I'm really excited about that in the short term. I'm also really thinking this year, like I have my own personal goals on how I can pivot more of my job to like, how can I delegate some of the more like strategic pieces of my job, and how can I really start to focus on eng manager education, mentorship, coaching. These are things that I've always been really interested in. And I think, you know, across the valley, we do kind of a poor job of investing in management and leadership, even though these are some of the most critical roles in our companies. I mean, managers, you know, typically have an incredible responsibility in terms of, you know, making their teams perform well, making people feel happy about their career progression. And yet, like, not very many companies are investing in training up-and-coming managers. Yeah. So one thing that I'm really excited about what Lyft does, we bring in Life Labs training. We put every tech lead and every manager through their core leadership courses, which I think are really excellent. And then we have kind of some, like, monthly eng manager lunches where we just get around and we talk about sort of what's on our mind. You know, right now we're going through a feedback cycle, so that was the topic of the last one. Sometimes we'll have a roundtable where we just go around and share our experiences, and maybe what comes out of that is you know, a policy around how we transition people to management. It sort of depends on what the topic of the day is. But I think there's a lot more that we could do, and I think we could invest a lot in teaching each other and teaching our peers. I think we have a lot to learn from each other. At Lyft, we transition a lot of people internally to management, but we also hire a lot of experienced people externally who come from a variety of different companies. And I truly believe that we have a lot that we can teach each other, and that kind of experience sharing is often more valuable than any kind of workshop that we could bring in. So that's where I would really like to spend my time. In terms of like longer term, I haven't really nailed it down yet. I don't like to have, you know, a very specific, you know, immobile plan. I like to sort of roll with the punches, but definitely seeing my experience at Lyft giving me the option of potentially, you know, taking a VP of engineering job at a smaller company, or maybe taking on like a larger scope role at a much larger company. I think those are both good options in front of me. And I've also been sort of in the beginning phases of exploring what would it be like to move into more of a coaching role. You know, I've been working with an executive coach recently, and a lot of what she does is very interesting to me. And I truly enjoy the time that I spend sitting down with eng managers, either inside of Lyft or the people that I mentor outside of Lyft, just to you know, help them along with their careers. I find that really rewarding and fascinating.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit more then about coaching and mentoring, because I agree that this is an area where we're beginning to see a lot more resources out there. And it's great to hear that Lyft, which is a company that I know and love, and I know a lot of my listeners probably know and love, and it's great to hear that they are so invested, you know, as a company, that you all are so invested as a company in sort of building really, really building the best possible people on people managers possible, and that we can always do better. So let's talk a little bit about mentoring and what it means and what it takes, what strategies and tactics it takes to really be a great mentor. And I thought a great way to do this would be to kind of look at it from a mentoring 101 perspective, like for the folks who are really new to it and really just need like some of the beginning, how do I even start to do well at this? And then also looking at it from more of the experienced mindset, like, okay, I've been doing this for 10 plus years. How can I really dial it in even more? So let's start with the mentoring one-on-one stuff, Jill. So for the folks who are new to mentoring, what advice would you give them to really help them serve their teams to the best of their abilities?
I mean, I think the first thing to tell anybody who's like starting to mentor is just that you need to have the confidence to know that like you can be a mentor and you have things that you can teach to people. You know, even for me, I've just started recently to mentor some managers and founders of very small startups. I've been working with Backstage Capital and Cape Poor Capital, who focus a lot on underrepresented, or as Arlen Hamilton says, underestimated founders. And Cape Poor, of course, has like everyone that they invest in has like some sort of gap closing mission. And they take a diversity inclusion pledge. So those are really important to me. And one thing was, you know, I wanted to give back to this part of the community, but I felt like, I don't know if I have the expertise because I haven't worked in startups of 10 people or less. Mm-hmm. You know, Lyft is the smallest company that I've ever worked for. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes hard for me to translate my skills and my experience to the experience of somebody who's a founder. But I definitely found that once I started taking some calls with people, that there were various things that I could help with. And the best thing that I can do is just to tell people what I know from my experience, maybe something that they should look out for in the future once they get to a larger size or to, you know, more of an inflection point. And then to also open them up to my network. So there might be things that I just don't know. And I will tell people, I'll be very honest if it's something that I don't think I can help with. But also if there's somebody in my network that I can connect them to, I will. And, you know, I encourage pretty much everybody in my org to be mentors. Like even the most junior people on my team can mentor an intern, or they can mentor maybe somebody who is trying to switch from a, you know, mobile engineering, iOS engineering role into a more like server backend engineering role. There are always things that you have that you can teach to other people. And so some of it is just like having the confidence to know that like, you know, you deserve to be in that meeting, in that moment, and that you have skills that you can share. So that's probably my biggest piece of advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really tapping into that confidence. You can help. Everyone can help. We all have experiences that we can draw on. And I love the suggestion about opening up your network, that you don't have to have the answer. If you don't know, you say, hey, I know someone who does and let me connect you. And that's super exactly. powerful. So what about the folks who are more experienced at mentoring and may have been leading teams for a while? What tactics and strategies would you suggest to them so that they can continue kind of pushing the boundaries of their own mentoring ability?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me that I've seen be the most effective is to stop myself from giving advice. And of course, I'm like sitting here giving advice to your listeners right now. but, you know, we will all solve problems in a very different way. And what I've learned from some like peer coaching forums that I've participated in that it's far more powerful for me to hear other people's experiences and choose what I would like to take away from their experiences and how that exactly translates to the specific situation that I'm in. Mm-hmm. And so I try to follow what's called the Gestalt protocol, which is, you know, using I statements instead of you statements. So I only talk about my own experiences. You know, if I hear a story that resonates with me, I'll say this resonates with me for this reason. I was in a situation that felt very similar, or I was going through a lot of the same emotions that you were going through, and here's how I handled it. From there, I like to ask a lot of questions and just allow people to kind of come around to their own conclusions, and they might have a better answer. If I'm just going to feed them my answer, they might not think about it a little more critically. They might come up with something that's even better than what I would have suggested. So I tend to steer away from advice. and more towards letting people solve their own problems. And the second thing I would say is just time management. Like, as you get more senior and more experienced, and you're more in demand for mentoring, it becomes very difficult to sort of manage that workload. I have an amazing admin that I just started working with who's been really pushing me to create space in my calendar for myself. And I've just had to come up with some tactics for, you know, these are the slots on a weekly basis that I have for internal mentoring. These are the slots that I have for external mentoring. And if I get requests that come in sort of out of band, I might try to connect them with someone else, or I might just have to have them sit tight. And if they have any sort of pressing questions, they can send me an email. So I think one thing is just to sort of be mindful of your schedule and to not feel guilty for, you know, taking time for yourself, for your own development, and for your own work.
Yeah, I love all of it. Especially the thing that resonated with me the most is the moving away from giving advice and moving more toward asking questions and making I statements. One of the things that I've been challenging myself in my own coaching lately is to stop saying you need. I've noticed I say that a lot when I'm coaching. So you need to do this. This is what you need to do in order to get where you want to go. And I actually stopped myself one time. You know what? You don't need to do anything. There's nothing. Right. You know, this is me. This is my experience. This is what I think might help you get where you want to go. And then and that really challenges you as a coach, as a mentor, to then ask the question instead of making this statement, you need to do this. So I love that.
Sometimes I can, you know, those kinds of statements can put people a little bit on the defensive. And so I think, you know, challenging people to think. And the other thing is just creating space for them to think, not feeling like you have to fill a silence. Just giving them a moment to let something sink in and to allow them to think through a problem and respond. Can be really powerful too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned time for yourself. And, you know, I want to underline that and put it in bold and all of that, because it's so important, not just in mentoring, but just in really getting where we want to go in life and in being successful. So do you mind sharing, Jill, just a little bit of what time for yourself looks like for you in your calendar, in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I have started to block off at least an hour a day for me to just like catch up on email, maybe prep for a meeting that I have. And I try to get more than an hour a day on a regular basis so that I can have time for things that come up. You know, typically there's some sort of crisis, or there's somebody who's really having a hard time, or there's somebody I've been meaning to reach out to and catch up with. And having that time is really important. I also really like to have the sort of like walk around and see who pulls me into a conference room time. And I just did that the other day. I, you know, managed to finish all of my meetings by 3:30 on a Friday. I have no idea how I did that. That doesn't usually happen. And I thought, let me just take a spin through the aisle. Yeah. And soon enough, I had someone like running after me telling me like, oh my gosh, we have this big meeting that's coming up and I need slides for it immediately. And, you know, I need to know who's presenting it. And so I was, you know, I was at least able to be available in that moment. And that was, you know, sort of a confirmation for me that that I was doing the right thing by blocking that time off.
It's such a great feeling, isn't it? To like, you know, just say, I have this space and, oh, wow, those folks over there, they really, you know, they're probably in this headspace where it's like, go, 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 hustle, hustle, hustle. And maybe they're not in a creative space that they need to be. And then you're like, I can come save the day. You know, it's like, I have some time. And it's really, it really is a great feeling. But you don't get that without like having that structure and having that discipline and those habits so that you could end all of your meetings by 3:30 and be able to help in that way.
Yeah. And one thing that I was working through my coach with was this sort of framework for what I say no to. And I think that's been one of the most powerful things that I've really put into practice in the last couple of months. And I just have this list of questions that I run through and a short list of reminders. And the thing that's at the top of the list is just, there's not enough hours in the day. I can't say yes to everything. Right. And so then just figuring out how to politely say no, to feel okay saying, what's in it for me to say yes to this? And what's in it for me if someone's asking for my time? maybe what's in it for me is a potential to recruit them down the line. Maybe what's in it for me is, you know, I'm just doing this to feel good about myself and to, you know, donate my time to someone. Or what's in it for me is like, this is actually, you know, something that is necessary for my job or my career. But I think it's been powerful to have those questions that I can sort of check myself on. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it's just figuring out how to gracefully say no to people.
Yeah,
that's the hard part.
It is the hard part. It absolutely is. But saying no is so important. If we're going to say yes to less, that means saying no to more. And so that is a hard skill to learn and to develop the discipline to do that. Let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about diversity, empowering women. And the way that I want to springboard into this part of the conversation is basically by just saying, I love your Twitter description. My personal brand is big earrings, big sunglasses, and Beyonce. Atta girl, go-getter, incredible, know the ledges, broad. I love it. And I'm going to take a wild guess, you know, that it takes a lot of confidence, and it also takes a lot of self-reflection to be able to do that and declare that to the world, that this is who I am, and I absolutely make no apologies for it. So my question for you on that, Jill, is essentially, how do you maintain that confidence so that you can not only have it for yourself, but then you can use it to inspire others, and especially women, to really do the same and claim their own power and just stand in their own superpowers?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. I don't even necessarily think of this as confidence. This is, you know, it's me being authentic and mm-hmm. that is pretty intentional. Yep. You know, at some point, like long, long ago, I had two Twitter accounts. I had kind of my like personal Twitter account and my professional Twitter account. And my professional Twitter account was super boring. Nobody really followed it. And it kind of became a pain to maintain both of them and to figure out when I could post to one and not the other. And I just thought, why am I going through the hassle of trying to maintain two Twitter accounts? Like, I should just be me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, several years ago, I finally deleted the personal one and kind of merged everything over into my professional one. And, you know, what I have found over the years, just as I gain more experience in leadership, is that I create much stronger bonds with the people who work for me and work with me when I'm not afraid to be myself. Mm-hmm. And I am perfectly fine being vulnerable in front of people, telling people what I think my weaknesses are, telling people that I'm open to feedback, telling them when I have heard feedback and what I'm planning to do about it. And, you know, part of this is also sort of allowing my personal life to kind of bleed into my professional life within reason. Because, you know, we can't easily separate those things. And I think that's especially true for people who are typically marginalized in the mm-hmm. industry. Like it's very difficult to sort of compartmentalize the things that you go through and the things that run through your mind during the day and when you're at home versus when you come to work. And I don't want anybody to feel like they have to have two different personalities the same way I felt like I had to have two different Twitter accounts. You know, I want people to come in and be able to tell me when their personal life is affecting their work productivity, mm-hmm. right? And then we can have an actual discussion about it. You know, if people are going through a breakup, if people are going through an illness, you know, I think one thing that was super interesting is we had this series of one-on-ones that I asked some of our managers to do to speak with the people on their team about inclusion and like, what does inclusion mean to you? Mm-hmm. What does that look like on your team? Does that mean more happy hours? Does it mean less happy hours? And there were like things that our managers found out about people who worked for them about like, oh, I actually don't like it when you do these particular types of offsites because, you know, I can't hear in one ear, and like these areas are so loud, I don't feel like I can connect with my coworkers. Like, what a powerful thing to find out after you've been managing someone for however many months. And so I think, you know, allowing people to have that personal connection will help you create a stronger team and a team that feels more comfortable at work and more, you know, more attached to the people that they work with. And I, you know, I view that as being really important. So authenticity is huge for me, and it's definitely a little bit calculated and it's intentional, but at the same time, it's like, you know, this is just who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And that being authentic, it's contagious. Like when you hear someone, they're like, oh, I love big earrings and big sunglasses and Beyonce. I just want to share with you, like, what's my personal brand. I don't have it down to the three things, but now I want to, you know, and it's because it's
I tell people my personal brand is joking about what my personal brand is. Cause there are a lot of things that I say my personal brand is, but these are my three.
Got it. Understood. Cause how can you really boil it down to three things? But these are the three things that are on my mind right now. Got it. And I love the thing that you did where you said, what does inclusion look like to you? I think that's a great, something everybody can do. Like if you're working at a company, or even if you're not, like what really is inclusion? Let's define that. But then behaviorally and strategically, what things are we doing and what things aren't we doing that can actually make it feel more inclusive to you? And that's when you start opening some doors. And if you come from a place of authenticity and compassion, then people are going to say, yeah, you know what? I have this learning disability, or I can't hear in one ear, or whatever it is, or I have a family, so I can't always make it to the 7 p.m. events. Yeah. And that's when we start having those conversations, and sometimes they can be difficult conversations, but I think it's a great question. What does inclusion look like to you?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So I'm interested in this, that when I mentioned that there's confidence in here, there's confidence in really kind of putting yourself out there. I find it interesting. You don't look at it that way, that it's more about this authenticity, that it's really about, I'm not afraid to be myself. And that it also sounds like, Jill, that this is kind of just who you are. And it's basically just showing the world who you are and sharing that this is something that's worked for me. So it'll work for you as well. The authenticity piece of it.
I mean, it's not like it's not scary, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's scary to ask for feedback and then actually get it, you know? Like, it's scary to have to deal with things that I don't necessarily feel comfortable dealing with, you know? If somebody's going through a personal tragedy, you know, I might not know how to respond in that situation. You know, if people who are from a different background from me are experiencing, you know, police violence in a different way than I do, I don't always know how to respond to that appropriately. And so that kind of vulnerability is really scary. Yeah. But then I think that is where sort of the authenticity piece comes into play, and to just, you know, to know where you're not educated, you know, and to say like, okay, I don't really know what the next steps are, but like, maybe I can connect you with someone who does, or maybe we can sort of explore this together. Maybe you can help me, figure out what the best way is to help you. So it's, you know, I guess in some ways it does take a little bit of confidence, or else, you know, just a little bit of like, fake it till you make it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's that authenticity, that vulnerability that leads us to the conversations so we can really start moving the needle in terms of inclusion, in terms of diversity, in a real way, instead of just talking about it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in two shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Is leading your team like herding cats? Are you sick of making stuff up without trusted systems to guide you? Are your days filled with useless, time-sucking meetings? Join my Facebook group with other tech geeks who are coming together to build thriving, high-performing teams who don't need constant hand-holding. No HR BS, just real stories from real geeks who understand the nuances of being a techie. To join us, go to genbunk.com/Facebook. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. All right, so we're almost up on time, Jill. I have one more question for you, and this is the question that I ask all of my podcast guests, and it is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
There are so many of these. I would say the biggest thing for me right now that's maybe a little bit top of mind is around the sort of management ratio piece. When you're growing as quickly as Lyft is growing, it can be difficult to sort of put managers in place at the right time. And there have been several occasions, since I started at Lyft, where I found myself with, you know, stretched a little bit too thin in terms of how many direct reports I have, or maybe even how many direct reports managers under me have. Mm-hmm. And what I have found is that hiring managers is extremely difficult. Of course, we like to transition people internally and to build up new managers and, allow people to sort of develop in their careers. But also, we make a pretty serious distinction between a people manager versus, a leader in the technical org as an individual contributor. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly valid for someone to say that they just don't want to manage people. Mm-hmm. So it's been tough to hire managers externally, I will say. Engineering management means different things at different companies. In some places it's more hands-on, some places it's less. And at Lyft, we're really prioritizing people who understand how to develop engineers. We want people who are technically credible, who can have, mm-hmm. Great discussions with engineering, who can be well respected by engineers. But, first and foremost, they're going to be people managers, and their responsibility is going to be creating high performing, cohesive engineering teams. We have to be pretty picky and pretty careful when we're hiring externally for these roles, just because it's such a huge responsibility. There's the saying that, like, people don't leave companies, they leave managers. Mm-hmm. And I think, that has always really resonated with me, especially as a woman in tech. People leave tech over having bad managers.
Yep.
And that's incredibly serious. And so I want to make sure that, like, anybody that we're bringing in is going to be a supportive manager. And it's one thing to make a mistake when you're hiring a software engineer. You can usually sort of figure out how to spread their work around if you have to unfortunately let one of them go. But with managers, that, can be incredibly disruptive to a team. And it's not good if you wind up having people who have, multiple managers that they've reported to over a short period of time. It's difficult for them to feel like they're being properly supported. So, mm-hmm. Just in terms of, like, how that translates to my challenges is just, I want to make sure that I get managers in at the right time. I want managers to be able to build their teams. But our teams have to grow really, really fast. And so at the same time, we're trying to make sure that we have a good interview process in place. To where we're able to find people who really think about management the same way that we do.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the management ratio, that's particularly a challenge. Is there a particular ratio that you like to keep that, like, for example, one manager doesn't have more than X number of direct reports? Is that kind of what you mean by ratio?
Yeah, so we have like general guidelines that we track at Lyft. So we're kind of looking in the like 9 to 10 engineers per manager, mm-hmm. ratio. Even a little bit less than that is generally kind of the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. On my teams, once I start seeing people get to 12, by that point we should already be looking for managers, but that's really a point where I might say, like, hey, we're going to take a pause on IC hiring and, like, let things stabilize a little bit. I recently refocused one of my recruiters entirely on leadership recruiting so that we could make sure that we're filling a pipeline really quickly. We try to get out in front of this, but also, like, we have a great recruiting team and they're just, constantly sending great engineers our way. So we're trying to keep that balance of, like, getting good talent in the door, making sure that, especially as infrastructure who, supports the rest of Lyft engineering, that we're able to keep up with them. But I also want to make sure that people have the proper leadership support in place as well.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the interview process is something that you're working on to make sure that you get the best people in the door to make sure that they're supportive and really capable of kind of creating these high performance, cohesive engineering teams. Mm-hmm. So as far as the interview piece of it, have you learned anything from that process of figuring out, exactly how to do the interviews, quote unquote, right, like the best questions to ask? Any nuggets of wisdom to share there?
We definitely have kind of a list of questions that we pull from. I always tell people at the beginning of interviews with me, I say, I'm going to tell you about myself. I'm going to tell you what I'm looking for. I want to hear about yourself. I want to hear what you're looking for. And then I'm going to ask questions. And when I ask questions, I like examples. So for me, I don't want people to just sort of answer in the theoretical. I want to actually hear about their experience and how they handled something and maybe how they would have done something a little bit differently in hindsight. So when people ask questions along those lines, I feel like I get a better feel for what their style is and what their experience level is. We have a few different topics that we run through. And so when we have an interview panel set up, you know, usually the hiring manager will assign, okay, I'd like this person to take developing people and, you know, how you manage high performers, low performers, how you manage senior people differently from junior people. So we have kind of a list of questions that we'll go through. We have a little bit of a guideline of accepted answers so that we can stay consistent. And then we also have some technical interviews that we do with generally pretty senior engineers across the org. And again, this is more like high level. We're not asking anybody to code, certainly not asking them to code on a whiteboard, but more like, how would you design this? How would you think about trade-offs? How would you, you know, resolve a conflict between two senior engineers who just can't agree on a path forward? And there is generally no right or wrong answer to these. This is more about like, how do you think and how do you, you know, mobilize a team? Can you spot sort of the you know, big decision points in a particular architecture? So that's what we're kind of trying to get out of that. And then the thing that's really important for me personally is just once we decide that that someone has sort of passed our interviews, we want to move forward with an offer, I really like to bring people in to meet with the team, even if it's just a lunch. But I also allow people, you know, if they want to have a half hour with this person, I tell them, why don't you go sit down with them and like just talk through maybe a current problem that you're having on the team, maybe a process problem, maybe something about your own career, and just see how they handle it, see what kinds of questions they ask you. And that, you know, that process, I haven't really ever had that result in not hiring someone. Usually by that point, we're pretty sure, but it also just makes, you know, the people who would be reporting to that person feel a lot more comfortable that, you know, a new person is coming in to join their team.
Yeah, I think sometimes folks are scared to, so if you're hiring, the folks might be scared to share some of the realities and some of the challenges that are going on right now. But I think, you know, hey, if this person really wants to work there and this person is truly a fit to work there, then giving them that realistic preview of, hey, this is what's in store. It's not all unicorns and rainbows. Absolutely. And then if they respond to it, like, bring it on. It's like, okay, this person very well may be a really great fit. So it's great to hear that you guys do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So we're just about up on time, Jill. It's been really, really great talking with you. So thank you for taking some time out of your day to chat today.
Absolutely. This was fun.
Thanks. Cool.